Hey, Ben. Adam Hogue, CHGO.
Adam Hogue.
Who wants to step into Hub's big shoes?
Hey, George.
Hi, Adam.
Obviously can't step into Hub's shoes, but...
Covering the Bears for CHGO.
Hey, Ben. Adam Hogue again. It was a little surprising that you took this job so fast without coming here first.
Walking in this building yesterday gave me goosebumps.
What's up? Welcome in, Hogue and Johns.
Ryan Pulse, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Two questions about Ozzie Chipillo. Number one, does he look like me?
No.
See?
I'm not the one bringing this up. It's our listeners.
They bring it up all the time. That's good. Number two, what
your face or your the like face. The whole
oh,
thing?
Oh, no way.
They've been calling him Giant Johns.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Adam Hogue.
I'm Adam Hogue, or I'm not Adam Hogue. He's Adam Hogue.
We just need to kick Adam Hodge off the show. Let him come back on Tuesday.
Adam Hoagie or Hogue? Excuse me. I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
And there's so many others on here. Our own Adam Hogue says, just found out.
With Spiegel and Holmes.
For the week left, and what there's still left to do here?
That's a great question. I love it.
On 670 The Score.
It's Hogue. Hogue, Hogue, Hogue.
How about having Les Grobstein saying your name wrong, though, in your open in perpetuity?
Yeah, it's great.
That's pretty cool.
Adam Hogue joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Hoger, what's up, man?
What's up, guys? I want that Grobber line to live on forever. That's the best. I can't believe we went all the way back to the Phil Emery era there. That was fantastic.
I mean, how far back do you go? What's your first year covering camp, I wonder, at this point? Adam, go ahead.
It was 2011 when I was with you guys at The Score. That was my first venture down to Bourbonnais, and I think I got three years in, the last two Lovey years, and then the start of Tressman before I moved over to the, 87.7 The Game, that great radio station.
When I was going through the picks last week,
yeah,
one of the picks that I found was me interviewing Phil Emery in the trailer down at Bourbonnais that year.
Wow, when we had the trailer down there in that year.
I miss those days.
I miss the trailer.
Yep.
I mean, I don't really. But you, Hoger, so all these years now seeing different camps, and we want to get to Ben Johnson with you guys this morning where he spilled the beans, and we want to get to the joint practice that happened today. But when I hear guys like Richard Hightower rave about the coach, or Kevin Byard today raving about the coach and setting the culture, do you see it as starkly as some of these guys see it in terms of the difference in what Ben is setting up than what you've seen since 2011 as a Bears coach?
Yeah, I do, because I'm actually seeing it with my eyes. I mean, that practice on Tuesday, I was trying to be cautious when the practice ended. I'm like, because in my head I'm going, I don't think I've seen a more physical practice than that in all the years. The only thing that was coming to mind was some of those old nighttime practices at ONU that they would do inside the stadium there. But it really was. And then when you hear Kevin Byard today say that in 10 years, this is the most he's never been a part of a training camp like this. Yesterday we had Grady Jarrett on CHGO. He's been around for a long time. He said the same thing, that Tuesday was the most physical practice he's ever been a part of in the NFL. So, I've seen Matt Nagy get to the podium at the start of camp, be like, hey, we're going to be physical. This is what we're going to be about. And then they do one live period the entire camp. Matt Eberflus came up, kind of said something similar when he started. They didn't go live in 3 years. So now we're living in this camp right now in the present where we're actually seeing it. And I thought it was important today, while they weren't live today against the Dolphins, what Ben Johnson was trying to accomplish by having that carry over and be what this team's identity is now, they were the much more physical team against the Dolphins. I thought it caught them off guard, especially on the field where the Bears defense was going up against Tua and the Dolphins offense today. It was very, very obvious that, and even on the field that I was concentrating more on, which was the Bears offense, which I think the Dolphins actually got the best of the Bears offense in 3 of the 14 periods. But physically, from a physicality standpoint, I do think the Bears were the more physical team on both fields today.
When you're watching Caleb, what are you watching for and what have you seen?
Well, so just very simply, the thing I'm tracking most closely is the completion percentage, because we heard the head coach say that he was going to put stock in that when camp started, that the goal is to be at 70%. I haven't tallied up today's yet and added that to the total, but right now I got him around the low 60s. And that's taking into account things like drops and stuff like that. But I think the good news is that, you know, about a week ago, probably he was more in the low 50s. So it's been trending up. So we'll see where it's at when camp is all over. Maybe he hits that goal. I thought it was a pretty lofty goal. I didn't necessarily expect him to get there. So we'll have to see where that goes. But beyond that, it's just, you know, it's continued progress with the pre-snap stuff, which it's way better than it was the first week of camp. We're still seeing it here and there be a problem, whether it's cadence issues. There was a false start today that Cole Kmet had that I was pretty sure was on the cadence. But those mistakes have been minimized, and I do think that they're getting there. Now, Ben Johnson's been very clear, both when he was on Hogan Johns with us in the episode that came out this morning, and then in his press conference later on today too, that the offense is still a work in progress. And I appreciate his honesty with that. He's not trying to gas anybody up. I mean, he really seems to be giving honest updates on where they're at on a daily basis.
Well, that's good, because we can all handle it, and we'd all appreciate it. And it does nothing but build credibility with everybody involved. Are you seeing a commonality with the throws that he's missing since you're tracking them all? Are they short crossers? Are they stuff from under center? Or is it a little bit of everything?
Probably a little bit of everything. The deep ball is still probably the biggest concern. It just still seems to be a little bit hit or miss. You know, he had that great ball to Roma Dunze the other day that I know the Bears put out on their social media. That was probably his best deep ball of camp. But there was another deep one. I think it was the Devin Duvernay. I don't have my notes in front of me right now, but well, there was one today in the back of the end zone that he just threw a little bit too far. So, but that was in the midst of a long stretch of basically 7 or 8 completions, and the one miss was that one deep ball. So that's still what stands out to me in terms of the most concerning thing. Otherwise, it's just kind of just errant misses here and there. And so you just hope that accuracy improves as the game slows down, because I think that's still happening. You know, now he's starting over, the footwork, everything Ben's asking him to do offensively, things are back to like when you're just a rookie again. At the start of being a rookie, when things are just moving really, really fast. So hopefully as they're able to pare this stuff down, especially as they get closer to week one, because whatever they're working on here, this huge library of plays, I mean, they're realistically only going to go in that first game with like 20% of it tops. And I'm just making that up, but you guys get what I'm saying. So ideally, once you go into that first actual game, you're paring things down. You're making it easier for your quarterback by the time you actually get to kick off on Monday Night Football.
Whenever we talk about the deep ball and accuracy, I think of two things. One is the terrible underthrow in London in the Jacksonville game that was picked off, and just his overall aversion to interceptions and his pride in not having a lot of them. So how much of that risk aversion you think plays into the deep ball and accuracy? And is that something Ben will drum out of him a little bit?
Well, hey, look, if that's what we're criticizing, that's not the worst thing in the world, right? Like, if you're going to throw deep balls or back shoulder balls or whatever it is in places where only your guy is going to get it or it's going to be incomplete, that's kind of nitpicking. That being said, you know, if there is a time to throw an interception, sometimes those deep balls, depending what down it is, but especially if it's, you know, third down or especially on fourth down, it can act like a punt. So it's not the end of the world. So I that's a good question. I mean, maybe I'll ask Caleb about that next time we get to talk to him, because I get the sense that I'm just guessing that it's more just, hey, it's harder to throw the ball deeper. So it's like when you pull out your driver, right? Your variance of hitting a straight shot tends to be a little bit more all over the place than when you're, you know, just hitting a shorter shot. So I think that's kind of more of what we're seeing with Caleb Williams when it comes to that deep ball accuracy.
Adam Hogue of CHGO is joining us here on The Score as we talk about the Bears and their camp. I'm fascinated by the left tackle battle. What matters in it for you?
Well, again, I'll give the head coach a little credit here in that he's not leaving us to guess it. I mean, he's been pretty blunt about what he's looking for, right? Whoever has the fewest mental mistakes, you know, can get to the line of scrimmage, not commit false starts, be on the same page, blocking assignments down, basically know the offense, right? And then second, yeah, running the ball is great, but Ben Johnson wants to have his whole playbook available. The more you have to help that left tackle, the more you have to bring extra help over there, the more you limit what you can do. So he's been on the record, very clear about that. Those two things, the pass protection matters the most and the lack of mental errors. So that makes it pretty easy on us to watch on a daily basis, right? On what we need to see and what we can evaluate. While we don't have the benefit of going back and watching all the practice tape like they do every day, we can judge that. I don't know that either one of these guys has really stood out in that regard. I think these preseason games are going to be huge. And it basically sounded like what Ben told us today, that even though a lot of the starters are sitting, that left tackle battle, we're going to see Braxton Jones, we're going to see Ozzie Tripillo, and it's all going to be right out there on Sunday for us to evaluate.
So when he told you this morning on your pod, when he spilled the beans, he said, "You want me to spill the beans?" You're like, "Yes, yes, please do." And then he did.
Please. Yeah.
Yeah. He intimated that he was excited about them skipping the games and that they're actually going to get them with reps, a lot more action that'll be beneficial before the game and after the game. I assume he meant today's practice, or what else did he mean by that, to your knowledge?
Yeah, so three things. I mean, one, let's just start with today's practice. You definitely saw an emphasis on the first team getting a ton of reps, Caleb getting a lot of throws. Today, I don't have the final number right in front of me, but without a doubt, because of how many throws I wrote down in my notebook, easily the most throws he's had in a single practice all of training camp. And you got that as not fully live reps, obviously, but at least they came against another team. And Caleb started off hot today in one-on-ones and seven-on-sevens. He was pretty good in the first team drill, although there was an interception in that period. And then, like I said earlier, I thought the Dolphins won the last three situations, but one of those was a two-minute drill period, and then they ended practice with all the players on both teams on the same field. Dolphins went first in the red zone against the Bears defense, and then the Bears defense went against or the Bears offense then went against the Dolphins defense, and the defenses won both of those sessions. But it seemed a little like they were trying to simulate as much as they could in a joint practice what a game would be like. And we've all watched those first preseason games, right? Like, is it going to play the first quarter? Is it going to be a series? Right. Is it going to be two? It's actually very few reps. So on top of today's practice, there's going to be a throwing session on Sunday at Soldier Field with the wide receivers. Now, that it has to apparently take place at least before 3 hours before kickoff. I guess there's a rule in there. So there's going to be a throwing session on Sunday morning at Soldier Field. And then something I've never seen before, guys, there's a practice here on Monday, the day after the preseason game. And so that practice, you have to imagine, it will be basically for the players who don't play in the game, because I don't think they're going to ask these guys that play a ton on Sunday to turn around and have a hard practice Sunday. And I don't think the pads are going to be on or anything, but it's just going to be continued reps. Whatever they feel like they hadn't accomplished through the game on Sunday, I think they're going to squeeze out on Monday, the day after the game.
All right, so that's a multi-tiered and very interesting answer. That's chock full of stuff, and it backs up what he said to you.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's just skipping the game reps to keep them in mothballs and not get them hurt. He's actually going to prioritize and actively use stuff around the games. It sounds sensible. Whether, you know, it sounds at least well thought out, doesn't it?
100%, and I think that's the key point here. Is like, you know, we've seen everything. All of us, we've seen coaches be like, let's play the guys, and then we see other ones that, like Matt Nagy, the night before a game 1 year, all of a sudden they told us, hey, none of these guys are going to play, and there really wasn't a reasoning given. And then it turned out, I think that was 2019. Mitch Trubisky and the starters didn't get any reps in the preseason, and there certainly was not a thought out explanation given. And again, I'll go back to the action too. It's not just what's being said by Ben Johnson. When the training camp schedule came out, when we first got this like a month ago, that was one of the first things we as reporters, because we're trying to plan our own lives, right? Selfishly, we're like, I remember texting somebody with the Bears being like, hey, is this a typo that there's a practice the day after two of these preseason games? And they're like, no, that's what's on the schedule right now. I mean, we'll see if it changes, but that's what they're doing. So,
dig it.
And here's what's also key. I think Ben is remaining fluid. You know, I don't think he is. And he said it today. He's like, that's a little bit of a change in messaging. He did say today in the press conference that he suspects that Caleb and the starters will play at some point in the preseason, but it's still to be determined. So I think he's legitimately looking at the progress, what needs to be accomplished, and is willing to adjust to what needs to be done before they play the Vikings in week one.
On the defensive side, what are you still trying to figure out?
Okay, so I think this is mostly a positive answer. I'm trying to figure out how good they really are. And what I mean by that is I have been pleasantly surprised. I thought there might be a step back just because you are changing scheme. You are changing voices in the room with Dennis Allen. And you don't always know how the talent's going to match up to what he's trying to accomplish. I think the good news here with the Bears is I almost feel like the talent that's been drafted and signed here in the last few years under Ryan Poles fits Dennis Allen's defense better than it ever did Matt Eberflus. I'm not saying that's across the board, but, you know, there's certainly in the secondary a lot of guys that I think their games. I think Jalen Johnson's one of these guys. I think Tyrique Stevenson can be one of these guys. Kyler Gordon, certainly, where they want to play aggressive. They don't want to just sit back and let these guys complete passes underneath and then just hope they commit a penalty or finally turn the ball over. They want to be aggressive. And so I've been very encouraged by that to the point that I think this can be a top 10 defense. I'm wondering how much higher can it rise? How much better than that can it be? Because from what I've seen from the offense so far, which is still a work in progress, you know, it might take this defense being a top five defense or really one of the best in the league in order for this team to make the playoffs this year. I don't know if top 10 is going to cut it, but I when answering that question, that's kind of I was looking at them today. I'm like, they're pretty impressive, but how good are they really? And I'll be honest, I think that starts with rushing the passer, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think they have good pass rushers, but I don't know that they have one guy that's just going to consistently be a game wrecker for them, you know, 10 out of the 17 games. And not many teams have that.
It's weird because I feel like they have good pass rushers, but not necessarily a good pass rush, if that makes sense.
Right. However, I agree right now, but that is where I think Dennis Allen's trying to create the overall pass rush without that absolute game wrecker. Some good signs I've seen and included today, by the way. You know, there's a great rep today where Grady Jarrett, if he stays healthy, is going to be everything they wanted him to be in signing him here. He collapsed the pocket from the inside. Dio Odengbo cleaned it up on the outside and got the sack. That's what you want to see. That's where I still think it's on the table that the overall pass rush can be good enough. Even if they don't have that absolute game record, I will say Montez Sweat's having a good camp, and that's extremely important.
You know, I think it's going to be, it's kind of like when you watch a Vikings team and you're like, where did Van Ginkle come from? Where did Jonathan Greenard come from? And the answer is in part, Brian Flores created opportunities for these guys. Like that's how Dennis Allen, he's going to have guys like faking blitz on every down, right? He's going to be threatening it on every down, and there's going to be guys that you don't expect. But boy, the way you talked about Grady Jarrett there, how about Jarrett and Big Bill if they're healthy next to each other?
Yeah.
I'd love to see a lot of that, and that could be a very powerful thing.
And Jervon Dexter, too. Guys, this is another – I should have mentioned him amongst the players who I actually think fit this defense better than the last one. I didn't understand that draft pick. It was nothing against Jervon Dexter. I liked Jervon Dexter's game. I just didn't think he was a fit for that scheme. He was not an ideal shoot the gap three technique in that Tampa 2 type of defense. This is a much better situation for him. We talked to Grady Jarrett on CHGO about this yesterday, about Jervon Dexter, and he's having a much better camp, being able to move between one technique, three technique, but be able to freelance a little bit more. And so all of those guys, I think if I'm worried about anyone, it's just the Andrew Billings. I'm assuming they asked him to put on weight, but I mean, he's as big as he's been in a Bears uniform. He looks fine, but he also feels like it feels like there's been more of a rotation there, which is fine because I'm talking about three guys and there's only two spots on any given play. So
you're trying to figure out if he's tired? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, those up-downs on the first day of camp, you know, that's asking a lot from that guy.
Hoger, as always, man, we appreciate you. Thanks for jumping on. Great job with the interview.
Yeah, hey, thanks, guys. This was fun.
Thanks, Adam. It really was.
Adam Hoge from CHGO and the Hoge and Johns podcast doing work. When we come back, let's talk about the reality of not watching a bunch of the starters, though. It's great that the left tackle battle is going to play out. That's something to watch for. We'll give you a couple other things to watch for next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Good vibes, baby.
Afternoons on The Score.
All right, man. Feels like game day, doesn't it? That's how we're trying to make it here for our players. So we're jacked up. We're ready to go.
So look, that's Sunday is game day.
Well, today was kind of game day.
Well, that's the whole thing, isn't it?
Kind of more game day for the starters, at least.
Like, Sunday, you want to settle in, you want to watch a Bears game. The whole week, I've been trying to figure out, is this game week or not? I've been asking everybody. And it's funny, because we got a texter earlier as we were talking about this stuff and the practice and everything. This texter said simply, I want to get drunk and yell at my TV. And sir or ma'am, I hear you. This is your football passion. It's your joy. 17 weeks a year, I would like to get drunk and yell at my TV.
I think Greg Gabriel had it. I retweeted it that now we are in the window of that we will see at least three football games for the next 5.5 months a week. Three football games a week for the next 5.5 months.
But are they football games if nobody's really playing in them?
Well, that's the problem with preseason, and I think eventually in the next 5 years or so, you know, that new CBA comes up, it will be figured out that they want 20 regular season games and they don't really want these preseason games. That being said, watching preseason games, it feels like football for about 10 minutes.
It's really close to football, Tanny, isn't it?
Yeah, and I just want to say that this is America. It is a free country, last I checked. And you can get drunk and yell at anything on your television if you want.
There's a lot of things to get drunk and yell at.
Yeah, if you want to have a couple, you know, cocktails and yell at love on the spectrum, you can do that. If, you know, whatever you want to do. If you want to, you know, get hammered and yell at the bear, you can do that too.
You can also yell at Colson Montgomery striking out. Or you can yell at the Cubs being four games behind Milwaukee.
You can yell at Luis Robert with an OPS over one the last 30 days. Yeah. Lawrence?
Can't yell at Jonathan Cannon anymore unless you get that MILB TV.
I can find him. You go down, yell at him.
Go down to Charlotte and yell at him down there.
Yell at him there.
But yeah, you can yell at anything. You can yell at One Night in Idaho, the Amazon Prime documentary on the Brian Kohberger murders that we started last night.
I was literally yelling at my TV last night because Alex put me on to the Any Given Saturday doc on Netflix about SEC football. And I immediately was like, oh, look at this disingenuous bastard that is on my TV right now.
Were you drunk?
No, I was not. So, I mean, that's probably even better.
It doesn't really fit.
It was true anger. It's like, oh, there's Brian Kelly on my screen.
Are you
being
saying
disingenuous yet again?
You're saying that drunken anger is not true anger? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's, you know, it's usually can be magnified by other things.
Yes,
I mean,
it can.
There's probably some anger at the root of it.
Oh,
but
I think that a lot of drinking is defiance and revenge on something true or perceived. Absolutely.
Well, all I know is that I saw Brian Kelly and I saw him with that fake smile and his BS, and I'm like, ugh.
Him putting his arm around the players, like, oh, I really care about this
and
player.
We all know how Brian Kelly gets down.
That Louisiana accent that always seems to come out.
That seemed to manifest itself from a guy from Massachusetts. Yes, it's a fascinating thing. But thanks for the reco, Alex. I'm excited to live through Alabama losing to Vanderbilt again.
What was he doing?
Episode 3.
What was Brian Kelly doing? Like doing his single white female version of Les Miles or something? Or like single white female Saban's LSU tenure?
I'm here with my family.
It's like, was he in True Detective? Was he riding a mower?
My family's been here for a long, long time.
See, I want to make flowers on Alabama.
Go Tigers.
I would give him that had he been there for a little while. Like, you pick up stuff. You sound like the people that you're around. Like, but no, immediately,
10 minutes.
You got off the plane, and now all of a sudden you're a Cajun. Like, yeah. It's really weird.
It's great to be here in Carcosa with my family.
Yeah, you got a. It's corrosive. It's corrosive down here. Yeah, he was at LSU for shorter than Andrew Vaughn has been a Brewer. That's how.
This King Vaughn to you.
Yeah, my bad. Got a T-shirt.
Not King Vaughn. King Vaughn.
No. So anyway, I wish Stacey Dales.
He starts talking Cajun to him.
I wish Stacey Dales a great broadcast as she becomes the first woman, I believe, ever to do an NFL game. This Sunday in the preseason. I believe that's the way that Jeff Agrest wrote it up. That Stacey Dales, she's in the booth.
I feel like Mina Kimes has been doing games for a few years.
Has she?
Yeah. Right. I think she's been doing games with the Rams. Mm. And now she's doing stuff with the Eagles.
Let's see what the history. The first woman in the booth on Sunday for Stacey Dales. She will be the first woman to join the Bears preseason.
There
TV
you go.
Booth. There it is. My bad.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
I feel like there have been other women that have done stuff. And I know for like Mina Kimes, it was a big deal when she was brought in to be a part of the Rams broadcast.
Well, anyway, I hope Stacey has a good time and a good broadcast watching non-starters for the most part. 18 players won't be there, according to Ben Johnson, 9 on each side. Who will be there? Who will be playing that is worth your time, my time, and the listener's time?
Well, look, the running back situation needs to figure itself out. And we had a depth chart that had Kyle Manungai as sixth, even fifth.
Was he sixth? He was sixth.
On the depth chart. And
that's gamesmanship.
It might be.
That's got to be trying to get in Kyle Manungai's head. Although Wani says it best. Wani really does say
He
it
does
best.
Say it best, and yeah. He is a big fan of Kyle Manungai.
This guy right here is going to play opening week, guys. Here's going to be the question to him, and I was talking to Ryan about this. He's not going to give you the 40 or 50-yard run, but he it's very tough for him to get for my man Kyle to get tackled in the backfield. He can make guys miss in a short area, but he's going to get 2 yards, 3 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards. So with him at running back, keep an eye on this. You're not going to get the 40 or 50. You're going to be able to move the ball down the field, but you are going to be in a lot of third down and ones, twos, and threes. So that's a decision, and I'll be anxious to see how that unfolds. So you're content to move the ball down the field with that type of mentality, or if you need the big play and you're always looking for the big play, then the only back that I saw that can do that is Swift. And – You know where I stand with the Andre Swift.
I'm all in for Kyle Manungai.
Manungai. What's amazing in that Wani clip, you hear me laughing in the background because you and I are looking at each other and and acknowledging how in Wani is on Kyle Manungai, in his words. He's, you know, and part of that is Wani loves a really good running back who might not be a game breaker because he loves that style and everything like that. But Manungai's a guy for you and I to watch. I'm a big fan. I'm a believer. And I don't want to characterize where you are on it.
Here's the other things you have to keep in mind. I want to say this very clearly. I hope Kyle Manungai makes the team. And I think that he'll be a Bear. I just know that seventh round running backs get cut all the time, and I imagine that he'll get cut and then end up on the practice squad. What I don't want is you guys making me root for Kyle Manungai to get cut.
That's up to you. You're gonna root to be right. I know. Are you gonna root for the Bears to find something in the seventh round that they can actually use, because they kind of need it?
But maybe they don't, and that's the part where I get frustrated.
I don't know how they don't.
Well, Here's why, Speaks. You have a lot of belief in Ben Johnson, right?
I do.
What if Ben has looked at Roschon Johnson and has figured some stuff out?
I don't have a lot of belief in Roschon Johnson.
Roschon Johnson scored 6 touchdowns last year.
I know. A lot of them on God's play. You know, just like...
And they have some of that in their offense that they run.
I hear you. So let's see. So now we've settled on it. you and I are going to be watching the running back usage an awful lot. I want to see Ian Wheeler. Ian Wheeler showed flashes in preseason last year.
This is why, like, these are the things that I'm like, okay, like, there's a lot of people in Kyle Manunga's way for him to make the team outright. He might make it, but for him to make it outright, there's a lot of veterans that they'd have to cut. Mm-hmm. For him to not just make the team, but to be a part of the game plan week one against the Vikings.
Well, I think it'd be pretty easy to get Ian Wheeler onto the practice squad, whereas I think it might be a little more difficult to get a seventh-round pick who's had a little buzz about him onto the practice squad.
I think a lot of the buzz about him is us.
Hello!
That's how he ended up in the seventh round.
Yeah.
If there was real buzz about Kyle Manunga, he would have gone before the seventh round. That doesn't mean that he can't end up being a good pro.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things that you have to keep in mind. Of course, Wani loves Kyle Manunga.
He went to Rutgers and played for Shiano.
And he loves Shiano.
He loves running backs.
Right?
Absolutely. But I, you know, look, my dad went to Rutgers. So maybe that's what's going on here. In part, but I also like Kyle Manunga.
But the good thing is that Kyle Manunga has been out there. They are giving him opportunities. Most of them have been good. A couple of them have been bad. And Ben spoke to, like, one of the bad things. Like, yeah, sure. That was on him. And then that was on the rookie.
And then he put him sixth on the depth chart, which has to be gamesmanship. Then on the other side, we really haven't talked much about the usage for Brisker, for Jaquan Brisker by Dennis Allen. And it's an interesting thing. Like, is Dennis Allen going to be participating in helping to protect Jaquan Brisker, maybe even from himself, as far as training camp goes? Here's Dennis Allen talking about it.
Well, number one, he plays with a lot of energy. He's a physical player. He plays with a lot of energy. He showed great range today. There's a lot of good things that he does. One of the things that we talked about in the offseason is just being available. And he's been available throughout training camp. He's continued to get better. And if we can keep him healthy, then, you know, I expect him to be a good player for us.
I don't know what to do or say about this. I think that the most prudent thing to do is to not play him. And the not playing him is selfish and selfless at the same time. It's selfish because you want, if Jaquan Brisker is going to get hurt, you would rather him get hurt in the regular season. It's selfless because why put him in a space where he could get hurt in the preseason when you know what he is as a player? Now, I know that we don't quite know what he is in Dennis Allen's system.
No, we really don't.
It would seem to fit him, though.
Yeah.
It would seem to fit him in his style.
I know, but like, this is, we've been talking, like, he's going to have safeties up on the line of scrimmage a ton and then staying up and then dropping back. What are the keys for them deciding to do that? What do they have to learn? He might have a lot to learn in that way.
I imagine that he would. But the thing about him as a player is that we know he's smart and he's tough. And that's what you're asking a safety to do. I personally don't like that he's playing. But this is his choice, and now he's been given all the data. He has recovered from it, and he knows the risk. So as long as it's informed consent, I'd rather that he walked away from football, but he still has an opportunity to make millions upon millions of dollars. And if he knows the risk and he's willing to make the risk, then who am I to stand in his way?
Well, it's going to be very interesting. There are some things to watch, and we can sprinkle more in along the way as we continue to talk about the Bears and what is a big Bears week with the joint practice today and an actual game on Sunday. And also George and Kevin have spoken today about stadium stuff. We'll get to that before too long as well.
Yeah, but we have some other things to get into today. We got some baseball stuff to do before we are done here.
It's a big series, man.
Yeah, this turns out to be a huge weekend for the Cubs. We'll explain why next on The Score.
Those Cardinals-Cubs battles are always tough, and the lineup here is a tough one to navigate. You know, I'm glad I don't have to face Ian Happ anymore. I think he owns me. But no, it's exciting to join a good team. You know, the lineup's really good. I hopefully can help out on the pitching side, and yeah, let's go make a deep run.
Look, the Cardinals are not that good, Lawrence.
No,
you know that.
Yeah,
I believe you said the Cubs taught you that.
Yep. I like watching the Cubs play teams because I get to write teams off my list. And the Cardinals were one that we were able to write off that list early. They're a 500 team, and that's been about what they've been all year. Like, they've just kind of been around it, and you're wondering, does that spur them on to try anything at the trade deadline? It did not. And now the Cubs go down there. But the Cubs are not in the best position right now.
Well, I mean, they got to take advantage of opportunities like this. You got to beat the teams you're supposed to beat. There's not that many games left. And you've got Matthew Boyd and Shota Imanaga in games 1 and 3 of this set. Colin Ray in between. But this is a team with the Cardinals that are 58-58. They have announced as an organization that they're packing it in. You should be able to get them down and take advantage of them. Now, they might get it revved up a little bit for the Cubs because historically they do, but this is your job to play your best and take advantage of them. And oh, by the way, the Brewers have the Mets this weekend.
They do.
So maybe, just maybe, the Brewers remember that they have to lose sometimes.
Unlikely. But the Cubs, after they're done in St. Louis, they fly to Toronto.
Yeah, that's
Blue not
Jays,
great for them.
I don't like having to admit that the Blue Jays are as good as they appear to be. I don't enjoy that myself. I still think the Red Sox could win that division, by the way. The American League East. The Blue Jays only 4 up on the Red Sox, so they certainly could. But yeah, no, the Cubs have to go to Toronto after this, and they've got the big 5-gamer looming with Milwaukee in the middle of the month. So you got to beat the teams that you are supposed to
beat.
It
would behoove you to have a good weekend.
Yeah. It
because the Pirates are what, sandwiched in between the Blue Jays and the Brewers, right? So there's a little bit of joy there, but you might run into Skeens, and he keeps dominating lineups and whatnot. But yeah, these are now... You've made these games more significant than they should be because of where you're at and what the Brewers have done in the last month and a half.
3 at St. Louis, then 3 at Toronto that you're mentioning, 3 home for the Pirates, and then the 5 with the Brewers, and then they go out west for the Angels, the Giants, and the Rockies. And
okay, there's an opportunity to get well.
It's a road trip. It's a road trip, though. Road trips can be difficult.
You remember that time a couple seasons ago where the Cubs had a great playoff odds and then they went to Colorado and then everything fell apart?
I do.
That was ugly.
I do remember.
And they were
that.
Wearing those ugly uniforms too.
Did you see what the Brewers just did on their road trip?
They won.
Yeah, they won every game on their road trip, and they also scored, I think it was 50 runs. They
That'll
scored,
work.
Scored 50 runs, and they didn't commit a single error. And that has never happened with any road trip of 6 games or more.
That scored, seems like a buttoned-up baseball team over there.
50 runs, no errors, win every game. That'll work, folks. That'll work.
Maybe there's a regression to the mean that's coming for them, and the Cubs can take advantage, and then we're in here on Monday talking about the Cubs being one game out. That would be great.
It would be great. It would be great. It'd be ideal. It's. I am not, nor should you, think of the Cubs as a wild card team only. Right now, I think as of today, they're 97% chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah, they're making the playoffs.
But they're like 37% chance to win the division, which is insane considering they led the division for how many days?
It was every day of the year, I think, until a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it was like 108 straight days of them being in first place, something like that. And now they're only 37% chance to win the division. But they've got to regroup. Here's hoping that Wednesday's matinee of a 6-0 win against the Reds was a bit of a palate cleanser as opposed to the rest of the crap that had been happening since the deadline.
Some interesting choices being made down in the Lou, too. You know, the idea of it's Yadi Molina weekend, and he's not just going to be there, Spiegs. He's going to be in uniform.
And people might not realize that. He's going to be in uniform for 2 of these 3 games.
Yeah.
And 2 of the 3 games, by the way, are national. Saturday night's game is Jason Benetti and John Smoltz on Fox TV.
I mean, Ali Marmol clearly feels comfortable in his situation, but hasn't everyone down there just been kind of waiting to, when Yadi makes up his mind that he wants to come manage, he's going to be allowed to come manage in St. Louis?
I don't, and
he's managing Team Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I think I don't think they're just going to hand him the job, but I don't know. I don't actually know. It's an interesting...
Why wouldn't they? If Steven Vogt can walk off the field and be a manager, why wouldn't the person who people think is the smartest catcher to come along in forever be qualified to walk in and manage?
Does he really want to do it? Does he want to be a coach and travel with a team for $1.62? Vogt was doing that, at least. Vogt was he was a bench coach, right? Is it Kotze's bench coach?
I think so.
So I mean, he was somewhere. He was somewhere doing that. Hell, man. Cubs made Ryan Sandberg go back to Philly and beat the bushes and work his way up.
And then they never let him manage. He had to go to Philly to go manage.
Yeah, yeah.
While they hired Slappy. What was that guy's name?
Dale Swaim?
Yeah, that guy.
Or was it Mike Quatty?
And then Mike Quatty, right? Yeah. And then Dale Swaim, or Dale Swaim and then Mike Quatty. Either way.
Slappy. Slappy's a better fit for Mike Quatty than it is for Dale Swaim. Dale Swaim's got more of a who kind of vibe. Quatty's an underrated goofball in the history of Cubs managers. I mean, Quatty had some moments where it was like, huh? What? Who's this guy?
Where's Matt at?
That's right. He did spend some time. Yeah, it was Mike Quatty that they passed over Rhino for. Mike effing Quatty. Slappy. Yeah, that guy.
Slappy. He's officially Slappy Quatty. Alex, put Mike Quatty in the Slack.
Put him in the Slap.
Yeah. Put Slappy in the Slack.
I'm just going to put Slappy and not Mike Quatty and see if the rest of the producers know who we're talking about.
That works.
When we come, that could also be Nick Madrigal, though, so you might want to parenthetically. when we come back, there has been news on where the Bears might play football. And Brandon Johnson should probably listen up to this segment next here on The Score.
I can't get an Eggie McMuffin because it's 10:35. Flappy, flappy, wait, wait.